Assalamu alaikum. I hope everyone is doing absolutely amazing. I just want to first of all start by apologizing. I know I didn't have an episode. We didn't have an episode last week, and this week it's taking a whole day for me to publish. Honestly, I've been ill. I've been ill since like Wednesday, but then I've just been soldiering the whole thing up because I had my birthday. I had my birthday on Friday, and I just had plans, and I had to like just keep soldiering the whole thing all the way through. But I finally broke, like reached my breaking point yesterday. Anyway, I took some medication and I got to edit this. So in today's episode, Rukaya and I had, you know, an amazing conversation as usual. We spoke about so many things, and I really cannot wait for you guys to listen to it. There's so much to learn from this episode, you know, about patience, about, you know, evaluating ourselves, about business. But it's really, really, at the end of the day, it's just really, really an episode that speaks to Iowa women and how we need to share our journeys and reach our full potential. Like he said, at the end of this, we're not lazy, so we can do all these things and we can make all these things happen for ourselves. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Before I begin, I want to give a shout out to Aisha. Again, I hope I am pronouncing her username well. I just want to give a shout out to her. She has been amazing. She has been supporting our page, and mashallah. Hello, I hope you're doing good. I hope you're having an amazing day, and I hope you have when you listen to this, I hope you're having an amazing day, and I hope you have an amazing week. So you guys, let's get into today's episode. Hello. Hi, I hope you're doing well. So guys, welcome to another episode, and I'm here with our guest. Can you please tell us about yourself?
Hello there, my name is Rukaya Tofa Bashir, and I'm supposed to talk about what I do. What I do, is that what I do for work or what I do generally? Well, I'm firstly a mother of three, a wife, a daughter, sister, friend, and then of course following in my passion, I have a business called Raw Beauty, which is a beauty business. We are a plant-based sustainability driven business, and we mainly use as base ingredients local indigenous plant extracts, like what we have locally to us, like moringa, hibiscus, baobab, jujube. You know, if I'm talking in Hausa, I can say it in Sizogali, kuka, magaria. And so we use the base ingredients, and we make effective skincare solutions for people suffering from many skin issues. So our brand is really about skin repair, repairing the skin from the inside out. So we deal with issues of acne, we deal with issues of hyperpigmentation. Hyperpigmentation are things like sunburn, uneven skin tone, etc. We also deal with aging skin and the symptoms of aging skin, like dryness, dehydration, you know, that kind of thing, or people suffering from eczema, psoriasis. So that's really what we do. And our products are, like I said, using base ingredients found locally, but at the same time using active ingredients, kama irinsu, hyaluronic acid, vitamin C, to make the products more effective and to make them personalized in the exact area we wanted to treat. So that's really us in a nutshell, what I do.
Yeah, okay, that's so nice. By the way, I don't know other many brands in Nigeria that do what you do.
Oh, really?
Yes. Or maybe I'm just really paying attention to you. Yes. Okay, so can you tell us, like, have you always been in the entrepreneurial world, or did you work 9 to 5? And also, what's the history behind Raw Beauty?
Honestly, Fatima, I prefer working a 9 to 5. All I know is, growing up, going to school, I've always wanted to work. That's one thing that I know for sure. From a very early age, I just wanted to work. And the entrepreneurial thing came about really later on in life. But I think I've always wanted to do something, and I've always wanted to create something that is something that lasts. You know, I've always been very creative, and I've formed many brands in my head, but I never really saw myself like heading a brand per se, but I've always envisioned that I'll be part of some big brand and I will help that brand, you know, develop and grow. So coming back to Nigeria, of how we treat our planet, how we approach production in any form, whether you are building, whether you are making skincare products, how you approach it, how you care about where your materials are coming from, how you care about how much you are paying the people selling these materials for you, whether they are local people, you know, all the aspects. And of course, having done the master's in sustainability and climate change, understanding further about, you know, how our planet, how we're destroying our planet and all that. So I think that really gave me a kind of purpose, you know, like I understood what my purpose was. And it's about not only being kind to yourself and others, but also extending that to animals, plant life, the planet in general. So I think that shaped really my way of thinking, and really embedded whatever it is that I do. I know that I love nature. I am very mindful about my environment and everybody in my surrounding. So I think that is really the main inspiration of my life and how I conduct myself. And of course, yes, you asked whether I've worked before, I think. So even before my master's, I worked in an architectural firm. I worked, like I said, I love working. And afterwards, I also worked. I worked for a few years, both in the furniture industry and also architectural industry, the built environment. I would say I worked for a while before coming back to Nigeria. So after coming back to Nigeria, I also worked as a general manager in a furniture manufacturing in a factory. So I did that for a while until I got married. And then after getting married, I moved to Abuja. I used to live in Kano. And so I took a hiatus of like 7 years, just, you know, getting my family in order. And then I found myself back in Kano again. And that was the time that I had the opportunity to start my business. Okay, so the history of Raw Beauty. Raw Beauty really stemmed from, I think, a need for me to solve a problem, a very personal problem. You know, I've always suffered from eczema, I think, since I was a baby. And it has really been a whirlwind for me emotionally with this skin problem, I should say. So, you know, from a very young age, I knew my parents were worried about it. I remember being dragged to different dermatologists. My dad loved traveling. So whenever we traveled, I would definitely visit a dermatologist. So, but I always remember as a child, they always used to prescribe E45 for me and it never worked. So I used to always have like so many E45s lying around. But anyway, it wasn't until I was like 19, when I was in university that I actually started taking it onto myself to find a solution for myself. Because, you know, it really dampened my growth and confidence a lot. Also being in boarding school, like there were so many things that I felt like I didn't take opportunities of because I was not confident with my skin. So, at 19, I took leadership of that, finding a solution for myself. And I found myself an esthetician who ended up giving me really harsh products. And my skin was damaged. It became very, very dry. So that was when I really started paying attention to ingredients in products, and I started researching. And I think around that time, you know, clean beauty was just kind of natural, plant-based, clean beauty, all those keywords. It was just kind of starting to spring up. So we had like pioneer brands like Body Shop, like Kiehl's, like Origins kind of popping up in the market. And I found Origins, which really was good for me. I mean, the weather, I was living in London, the weather was temperate, so it wasn't like hot. So the products worked for me, and I used those products for, I don't know how many years, probably around 16 years or so. But anyway, in moving back to Nigeria, I think I found it difficult, you know, because the products were not available here. So I found it difficult. I wasn't like traveling all the time. So it's always when somebody has to go, you have to now ask. You have to now ask for a favor. And I hate asking for favors. So I was like, this cannot go on. This is not sustainable. I have to find a solution locally. And I was trying different brands. But anyway, I found Palmer's cocoa butter. That was the solution I had. And it was fine. It worked okay for me. I wanted a bit better, but I couldn't find, so I just stuck with it. And being, like I said, when I got married, I took a hiatus. So like being married, being at home, not working, you know, you would start getting ideas of what you should be doing, even if you're a housewife, etc. And I started just experimenting with ingredients. I was discovering ingredients like shea butter, coconut oil. So I would just like Google suppliers and I'll just call them. I'll say, oh, you know, I want to test your product, blah, blah. So they'll just send it to me. And then I was able to like find the best producers of these ingredients. And then one time I was in the UK and I found out I was pregnant with my first daughter, and so I couldn't travel back. And so I was there for a while. And so I thought, instead of just sitting down doing nothing, let me just go and do some courses. And that's really how it started. So I went on some courses, and then coming back, I was just making things for myself. I had family members maybe that have eczema and stuff that would be like, okay, why don't you try making this for me? And I would make something. But the real moment where I was like, okay, I have to start this as a business was when I went to give birth to my daughter in the States. And she came out and her skin was just terrible, dehydrated. It was like so, I don't even know how to, like an alligator skin. And so I looked at you know, the first thing is you don't really have confidence that your thing will work, mm-hmm. and you're also in a foreign country. So, of course, maybe I took the easy route and I was like, okay, let me go and buy something for her. And at that time, you know, Honest Company was out. I'm sure you've heard of Jessica Alba. You know, she has a skincare brand called Honest Company. And at that time, she was also very much into sustainability like I was. So I naturally was kind of understood the brand and was kind of steered towards the brand. So I got the brand and it was so like watered down. It wasn't moisturizing my daughter's skin. It was just like, wasn't working at all. So I then researched another. I know another brand called Burt's Bees, and you know, I've seen it around. I know their product. So I tried Burt's Bees and it was a bit better, but still her skin was not like getting any better. So I was like, you know, Rukaya, like you've done courses, like just do it yourself, you know. So, you know, I went to Amazon and some other sites, got my African ingredients and all the things that I needed, and I made my first skin butter for her. So that's like, honestly, within a week, her skin, like, it's like she shed it off and grew new skin. And my sister was with me at the time. She was like, they called me Omi Adam. She was like, Omi, you have to start doing this as a business. So before I left, like my cousins and stuff, you know, I was making skin butter for them and leaving it with them. So that's really how it started. I came back home after giving birth to her, and it took me another 3 years before I could actually start the brand. But I found myself in Kano like 3-4 years later, and I was able to start the brand then because I had them in daycare. At that time I had three, so I had them in daycare, and then I was kind of bored between 9 o'clock and 1 o'clock. So I would just like, I had a small kitchenette by my kitchen, and I just decided to turn that into a production space and started making soap samples, and that's how it started.
That's such a beautiful story. Honestly, like, most successful brands take so much time before they get started, and once you start, so amazing.
Yes, and before I started, you know, I had these big ideas. I think that's why I didn't start for so long. I had these big ideas of how I wanted to start, like I needed to have this, I needed, but being in Kano and having nothing to do and the kids are not there, I was just like, I'm so glad I started small, because you learn so much, and you know, you develop the products that way. Because when I started by selling it to family and friends, and you know, then I was like asking for feedback, and that's how I was able to develop the brand. And then of course I realized, like, okay, like I'm a very creative person, I know everything, I know how I want my branding, I know the names, I know all these things, I know the ingredients I want to use, I have my suppliers, I have how I want to market it. But the financial aspect of it, no, I'm like, I have no idea, you know. So, you know, this is it. Entrepreneurs have to know that they can't do it all themselves. Like, it's a constant learning. When you're self-employed, you constantly have to drive yourself to learn more. I had to take courses, even on how to use social media, because I wasn't even on social media before. You know, so you just have to take courses and just organize yourself. So that was done. And honestly, within about 6 months of doing that, I was able to, like, I didn't have enough space anymore in my kitchenette. I had to move to a space, and that's what I had to do. So that's really how it went.
Our beauty started. Okay, so how are you able to run a successful business in Nigeria as an Arewa woman? How has that been for you? Recently, I've been following your updates on Instagram about your spa that you're opening up. So how has the journey been? You know, the brand is growing. You're an Arewa woman. You're in Nigeria. How has that affected your growth in a positive or negative way? Just tell us the pros and the cons.
So as an Ariel woman, I would say that honestly, truly and honestly, in the beginning, it was quite frustrating for me. Like I said, I took a gap because I was somebody who was very much work orientated. I'm somebody who, growing up, I never dreamt, oh, I'm going to get married, have kids. I dreamt, oh, I'm going to work, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be successful, you know. That's how my thinking was. And then, of course, you know, falling in love and getting married and, you know, getting married also to somebody who is well-to-do and who doesn't feel like you need to work, you know. But I feel like my husband wasn't like, you need to work. I understood later on, but I think in the beginning, I didn't really understand fully, like, what was happening. You know, now that I'm where he feels I should be, he's like so supportive. But in the beginning, it was definitely difficult because I think for him, it was more like, let's have our family first, let's sort that out first, and then you can go on and do whatever it is you want. And you know, I needed that halt because I was just very ambitious and just all about, you know, that was my perspective. I wasn't like thinking, oh, I have to be like a wife, I have to be a mother and all these things. So those things had to come slowly, and I did need to take a break to get those things out of the way, because I think if I had probably carried on working, I probably wouldn't have paid so much attention to that aspect. So I think it worked out in the end, and obviously, you know, it just worked out, because obviously if my daughter hadn't had that, that gave me a whole perspective of even dealing with the thing, you know, dealing with more empathy, with more like as a mother, rather than just somebody trying to sell products, you know? So I think that helped me in the long run. And now I would say as an Ari woman, honestly, like my husband is so, so supportive. You know, in the last 4 or 5 months, I would say like I have opened my office. I have grown the company from like 3 or 4 people to now like over 10 people, and it's still growing. You know, the whole of today I've had interviews from morning till 4 o'clock, and I'm, you know, we're doing up the spa, and another opportunity has come up also to partner and do a wellness center. So things are happening, alhamdulillah, and yeah, I have the time to do them now.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. Like what you said at first, I think I'm at a stage in my life that I'm just getting to realize that you just really need to be patient with how things unfold. Like I'm also very, very ambitious. And the fact that you said you were an ambitious person and you had to take this break and focus on your family, I feel like if I was in that position, I would have almost died.
Yeah, I was constantly complaining, believe me. But now I see like the wisdom in it, you know. So now I'm grateful for that time, for building my family, for, you know, having a good foundation and structure. Because imagine, even when I first got married, I was still working. And my husband lived in Abuja. And I was like, I'm not going to follow you to Abuja. Like, I have my life. I have my... So we're literally, like, doing like this every 2 weeks back and forth. And that's no way to start a family, right? So it was completely selfish of me. But of course, you know, you can say, oh, you're a modern woman. Okay, what is the guy also doing? But at the end of the day, I didn't marry somebody my age, somebody older than me, and somebody that is already established. So naturally, I would be the one that will be making more of the sacrifice, and also the culture, the whole cultural thing, you know? And also, like, even when I moved to Abuja, you know, what work can I go and get? Do you get what I mean? If it's in a furniture factory, it's all men. If it's in an architectural firm, it's all men. So wherever I found myself, I was literally maybe the only woman.
So I remember times when my husband will come, will follow me to the office and be like, no way. And I think I got like 2 or 3 jobs and my husband was like, no way. And I've started and the first week is like, okay. And then I just gave up. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll just be a housewife.
I don't know what to say. That was such a huge sacrifice, but like, see, you can see the wisdom behind everything. So I think at the end of the day, you just have to be so, we just all have to be so patient.
They call it beautiful patience, right? It's like you have to choose. I feel like women feel like they can have it all. You can have it all, but not all at the same time. You know, you have to decide. And I feel like it's the right thing because you have your family first. Even now, I feel guilty. Like, there are times when I want to spend more time with my kids. And what I'm able to do is like, okay, I'm trying to build up my company where it doesn't need me at all. You know, I have the right people in the right place. For now, I work Monday to Thursday. I give it to my work. And then I don't work Friday. I don't work Saturday. I don't work Sunday. So I'm just at home. So that works for us. But ultimately, you know, whatever it is I build, I feel like because my kids are still quite young, they still need me. There's a lot of guilt still that comes with, oh, you know, sometimes they have homework and I have to allow the nanny to help them. It's just a sacrifice. You can't have it like 100% perfect, but you're just saying, you know, you're doing this not only for yourself, but also for them. And I think kids generally, like my daughters, you know, I have 3 daughters, they're all girls. So it's like they're really proud of me, you know. In fact, one of them, my youngest, she wants to work with me. She wants to learn what I'm doing. She's the one who's going to take over the business, you know. So I think they're very proud of me even when they go to school. Oh, this is what my mom does. They even try to sell my products to their teachers. Sometimes they'll come and ask me, Mommy, I need your card. I need to give so-so person your card.
I think we all have to learn from what you just said. At the end of the day, it's just patience. Just be patient. Everything always falls into place. Yeah. Everything always. So if you're listening, you know what to do. Yeah, okay. So I follow you on Instagram. Like, I just heard the backstory of how Raw Beauty started and how you just... how you grew passion about just natural products and the planet and everything. But I've always known you to be someone that speaks on natural beauty, not just only about in your brand, because I follow your personal page also. You also speak about it. So you also speak about natural beauty, like people finding beauty in themselves.
Yes.
You speak about beauty from within. So I just wanted to speak to people like that don't find beauty in themselves at all. We have so many cases of, like we spoke about earlier on off this whole podcast, bleaching, skin bleaching. So there's so many, we have so many imperfections in ourselves, but how can one find beauty in themselves, like beauty within, in and out?
I always tell women, you have to fake it to make it, but not fake it in terms of bleaching your skin. But I think confidence is something that every woman will suffer from at some point of her life. You know, it's always one thing or the other, whether it's body image, whether it's complexion, whatever it is. But I think, you know, whatever it is we do, even in the way that we interact with others, is really to see the good side, to see the positives and not concentrate so much on the negative, right? I think it's easier said than done, but I feel like, you know, I did this talk and sent it on social media about bleaching. And I got a lot of women saying, and I'm actually doing another talk for Saturday about it to just address the replies that I was reading from so many women, that, you know, the men prefer fairer women. And I just feel like I should do a talk about that, because I feel like whatever you project onto the world, that's how they're going to view you. That's how they're going to receive you. Because really and truly, if you go out thinking you're not as pretty as a fairer person next to you, or you don't have anything as much to offer as her, That's the energy you are giving off to anybody. And men, you know, men are not complicated human beings. They're actually very simple in the way that they function, is that what you give them is what they take. So if you're thinking, I'm not as pretty as her anyway, and you're with her, that is the energy you are giving up, and that's a person he's gonna go with because you don't feel you're pretty enough for him in the first place. So I think with anything in life is your thoughts are actually what you receive. You know, if you're a confident person, you work on yourself. And I don't feel like there's any man that would, if like a fair person and a darker person are sitting side by side, and the darker person, you know, has everything on point. She looks after herself. She's kind. Her character is clean. Her character is good. And she looks after herself. She's educated. She's well informed. Do you get what I mean? She carries herself well. And then you're sitting next to a fair person who doesn't have as much qualities. I don't feel like the guy would choose the fairer person. I don't feel like, unless, of course, the guy is just like Shikanshibe Sankanshiba, and he's just going with a trend, for example, which who wants that? You know, everybody wants somebody that can think for themselves, that actually identify quality, right? So I don't feel like, I think Arewa people, as a people, we don't like working hard. We don't like going deep. We don't like looking at the details. We like always cruising on the surface. And this is me included. Even the other day at work, I analyzed myself and I was like, okay, I need to start going deeper because I'm somebody who's very creative. I see vision. I see, you know, I'm an aesthetic person, but you have to start going into the details. And I think this as a people, like, we don't like going into the details. We like just cruising on the surface, not really challenging ourselves too much. Do you get what I mean? So I think that, yes. So I think this is like a general thing of Hausa people that I've noticed, and it's really something that we need to work on generally. So I don't feel like, I think beauty is not just about your skin tone. It cannot be just about your skin tone. Beauty is something that is so, so complex. It has different aspects. It has different layers. It's not just about the outside, but it's also, I think most of it is even from your character and what is in the inside. And also, of course, you can talk about, you know, what you put into your body. Also, that will also determine how your skin looks at the end of the day and all that. So I think, yeah, we should just stop being shallow and thinking and having this inferiority complex, you know. There's nobody who's going to choose somebody because they're fair. Yes, maybe at a glance, you can see, you know, first, you know, a first look at something, maybe your eyes shine more on this, but I think longevity-wise, nobody's gonna stay with a fair person if she's rotten, you know, and ignore somebody who has good character and who looks after. I don't think it's about skin tone at all. I think it's about healthy skin. I think it's about healthy, healthy character, healthy emotions, and all that. So,
and most Arewa women also like to just focus on, oh, what women think, and you can never ever please anybody 100%.
Just think what would I think?
So it's best you just do what works for you and what makes you feel comfortable in yourself.
Exactly, and doing it that way, being authentically you, you know. Being true to yourself, I would say, would always attract the right people to you, as opposed to you. You know, I think as a people also, we do not like analyzing ourselves. You'll see somebody talking about somebody else. But it's like, are you looking at yourself? I don't know why that is. As a people, we don't like analyzing ourselves. It's very important to analyze oneself every now and then. You should even have like a day, like once a month, you should have a recap of how you've been, what you've done, things that you've done that are good, things that you've done that are not good. You should analyze yourself, just like you would in a job where they review, you have your KPIs, they review. You should have that on your life and who you are as a person. You know, you have to develop yourself. You can't just go with the wind. Like, you have to be so intentional about who you want to be in life.
Okay. So, about your business, how are you able to stay consistent since when you've started? How are you able to stay consistent while taking care of yourself and your family?
Consistency for me comes from the passion. I don't feel like I've been that consistent. You know, there are times when I feel like the past 5 years I've just been kind of cruising. But at the same time, I've been preparing myself, waiting for the opportunity, and it has presented itself now. And honestly, every opportunity that comes my way, I'm like, let's go. I'm not gonna miss it, you know? So I think consistency is about passion, you know? Without the passion, you really will not be able to be consistent. And sometimes consistency is also about the opportunities that you are given, whether you place yourself in that receiving end to receive those opportunities that might come your way, being prepared. Consistency, it's also, like I said, the passion, but more especially, like, for me, what keeps driving me is like the stories that come back to me and are like, you know, this is what my skin used to look like and now this is how it looks. You know, there are so many stories that make you feel okay, like I'm doing a good thing, I'm helping people out. And so that keeps me going. That, you know, you have a strong connection to why you started something, because you are genuinely solving a problem for people or for the planet.
And I think you spoke about how you tackled the whole business and your family earlier on when you said you give out time Mondays to, yeah. So can we, lastly, can we speak on the whole Umi network? I think you started last year, right? And I've attended a few. Even I couldn't attend the last one. Yeah, okay, so can you just tell us, like, what brought about the whole Umi network? How has it been able to help the Ariwa community, you know, just bringing us all together? Just tell us all we need to know about it.
So the Umi network started International Women's Day, right, was coming up. And usually I'm somebody who likes to feel like, okay, every year I look and I said, okay, what's going on? What are the activities going on this International Women's Day? And I always, mostly, I think I've been to one by Mima, but she's not doing it consistently. And even in that meeting when I went, I've been to so many, like, from other people. Usually I have this She Forum that I go to, and I love that, and it's group of women from different sides. But I've always noticed that, you know, when I'm there, everybody's like talking, everybody's like really getting along. It's such a good time for women, right? But when Ariwa women are together by themselves, I notice like I don't get that feeling. I don't get that excitement. I don't get that. I become very conscious. I become very, like, after 30 minutes, I just want to leave. I don't get a positive environment that I feel like I can thrive in. I feel like there's always judgment. There's always, or I always feel like I'm meeting other Ariwa. Maybe it's a wedding setting and I just don't like going to weddings because I feel like most of the time, unless like they're family weddings and I have to go, but I feel like most of the time, like, it's all about what are you wearing. Like, I like to look good, but I don't necessarily want somebody to notice, oh, you are wearing so, like, if I see a person, I'm just like, oh, you look good. I'm not saying, oh, you are wearing an LV bag and or this kind of shoe. Oh, are you wearing a Holland or a, do you get what I mean? I don't like that kind of analysis. So I've always felt a bit like uncomfortable in those like gatherings because I feel like it's just more about the surface, like I talked about. And so I was just craving for somebody, for something like, why can't I just meet Ariwa women and we just come together and we like talk about meaningful things like that I would actually feel like, oh, I don't want to leave, you know? So that's really where it started. And I was like, oh, I think I can do that. I can get people and why don't we just celebrate each other? Why don't I sit somewhere? Everybody is Ariwa and mbazanyi gulma komatin daya ba. Mbazanyi complaining ba about life ina ko wani abu da yake faruwa da ni ko ina son ka nayi kaza ko. Let's just celebrate all the good things happening to us. Let's celebrate each other. So that's really where it stemmed from.
How is it going so far? How is the whole community going? What have you guys contributed to the Ariwa community?
It's going well in terms of we're building a community, but I think it's still quite slow. I think, you know, the Celebrating Women event allows us to kind of just leave the home and just gather over good food. Good food is always a good excuse to go out, have dinner or have lunch, and just listen to each other. It's very important for us if we are to support one another. It's difficult to support one another without really understanding one another. So the whole point of Celebrating Women is every meeting we choose some women within the membership that, and it's not like a paid membership, it's just you become a member and you're part of the group when you attend an event. So it's just like picking people from the group to speak about themselves, to tell us their stories, because I feel like there can never be support without understanding. You know, in Ariwa, we have this thing. I never knew there were so many Ariwa women doing so many great things, because you'll just meet at a wedding and you'll talk about nonsense. Mm-hmm. Or you'll meet, mostly it's weddings, mm-hmm. or maybe like a little get together, kosuna kona. You never talk about what you're actually doing with yourself. It's all like surface level banter. Do you get what I mean? But kuma, it's in our culture that bama so like, like, for example, you won't come and be saying, oh, this is what I'm doing, that's what I'm doing, oh, I love this, this is what I'm doing, this is who I'm helping out, you know? It's not in our culture because it's seen as like you are showing off. So like, even if something good is happening to you in your life, it's like, I cannot tell anybody. You're doing something great, but you are like so secretive about it. People just see boom, and it's like it just came out of nowhere. But here you are, you've probably been working on it for like a whole year, but you are like, no, so like, how are you supposed to inspire other people? How are other people supposed to see your growth, your development, and be like, okay, how's the next girl looking up to you supposed to be like, okay, yeah, like if she can do it, I can also do it, yeah, and I can actually go and ask her, like, this is what I want to do, you know, do you have any advice for me? How do the older ones mentor the younger ones if the younger ones have no idea what they're even doing? So there was like a huge disconnect, and this is what we're trying to do with Celebrating Women. We have, then obviously the NGO came out of that. We opened an NGO because I saw the need for the community to develop and grow themselves, to just advance themselves in their skill sets and also personally. You know, there's a lot of work to do. With any job, if you want to be like in the job space or you want to be an entrepreneur, but also in the social aspect, you know, there are a lot of areas that you could develop yourself. So we try to have a mentorship program where we can give back to the community, because I, you know, Abuja is a melting point pot. Everybody is from somewhere. And so I've noticed that most people doing charity, we don't give to our immediate environment. You always send it back home. But your immediate environment is the one that has hagi on you. And so if you don't give back, you're actually living amongst these people and you don't give anything back. How do you expect the community to be kind to you, in a sense? So you have to give back to your immediate community. It's important that you give back to your family and your state of origin, but your immediate community comes first. So we try to adopt a school and we go and mentor the girls there and the boys. It's a government school, but I think we're going to start stretching ourselves into private school because the government, there's so much bureaucracy and we don't get to see the students as much as we want to, and we want to have more impact. So that's one of the programs we do, the mentoring and celebrating women. The event is affording us of this because when people pay for dinner, we take like maybe 10% of it. And it goes towards the mentorship. We pay for school fees and all of that. So that's done. And we really want to start having like kind of courses. We've started doing courses, but we only had one. So we want to do more of those, you know, where women can go. We have a goal setting workshop, which went really well. So we're also developing other courses with that. We're also developing other courses like emotional intelligence and setting yourself a direction, because I feel like we all need that course, setting yourself a direction. A lot of women, Ariwa women, don't even know who they are. They don't know what they want to do with themselves or their lives. So I think setting yourself a direction is something that helps you create a vision for yourself. You know, do your vision, what's your mission and purpose in life? What do you want to achieve? You know, what is the strategy? How are you gonna achieve it? Also like, yeah, the strategy, how you're going to achieve it, and also creating an identity for yourself, actually saying, okay, this is who I am, because I feel like a lot of people don't even know who they are. Talk less of creating an identity. You just allow people to define you, but you haven't defined yourself. So, okay, yes, she's like this, she does this, she does that. But no, like, you're not allowed to define me. I tell you exactly who I am and what it is I want to do with myself. And then, of course, when you define yourself, you start putting it out there. Yeah, some people, I did this brand, personal branding. Some people like, so you want to sell yourself? No, it's not. Whether you want to sell yourself or not, you have a personal brand. People have an idea of who you are, whether you tell them or not. If you keep quiet and don't tell them, they will define you. But it's up to you to say, no. Okay, yes, I'm like that. Okay, no, actually, you're wrong. That's not who I am. That's not how I am. This is who I am. And then put it out there and stay the course and develop yourself. And even if you're not there, you can actually say, this is what I want to become. This is who, the kind of person that I want to become. And you can develop yourself in that way. So these are the things.
Yeah, I love how you said the UMI network is just all about, you know, Ariwa women coming together and speaking about meaningful things. I think that's kind of similar to what this podcast is.
Exactly, very similar. And, you know, because we've allowed ourselves to be defined by others, because we never tell our stories, we never talk about ourselves. And so what they see is just what we show them, which is nothing, really. So we need to start changing that narrative, because once you start coming to these events, I'm like always blown away by what these women are doing. I'm like, how come people are like, Ariwa, blah blah. I never knew that these women, some of them are like so like successful, you know, leaders in the World Bank, leaders in the accounting world, you know, international organizations. I'm just like blown away by these women, and I'm like, yeah, I could co-iron and arewa then. You know what I mean? Because we don't tell our stories. Like, I see these women, some of them, like, I see them often. I never even knew that they are doing these things, honestly.
We're evolving now and we're telling our stories.
You have to, because you realize that this is also, you're branding yourself, and it's affecting us more than it's doing us any good. Because, you know, opportunities come, nobody's gonna offer it to an Ariwa woman. It will go to a Yoruba woman or an Igbo woman, because everybody just thinks, ah, those ones, they just want to be housewife, or I don't think they'll be intelligent enough to be able to handle. Do you get what I mean? So, like, it's up to us to show that we can do it. We have the potential, and, you know, we're not lazy.
100%. Thank you so much. It was really nice talking to you. There's so much people will there's so much to learn from this episode. A lot, like, people have always seen your brand, and now they get to know the backstory, they get to know how it happened, they get to know the obstacles, you know, on your journey, and how you never give up and you just pursued what you wanted to do eventually. Like, from architecture, now you own a skincare brand. And it's really, really beautiful. It was so nice having you.
Thank you so much, Fatima, and well done, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much.